Hello, everyone. I'd like to call the meeting of the Richmond Fund for Children and Youth Oversight Board to order at 6:44. Please note when speaking, there's a switch to your lower right, I believe on the desk, to turn the microphone on and off. We ask that you please be respectful of speakers and avoid silent conversations. And with the board's concurrence, unless there's any objection, I will convene the meeting to the point of item F5, the action item in which the board will select co-chairs. And from there, I will exit my responsibility as a convener and turn it over to the co-chairs. Prior to beginning roll call, LaShonda White, the director of the Richmond Department of Children and Youth, would like to say a few words.
Thank you, David. And I just want to welcome everyone to the Oversight Board. I am so honored to serve as the director for the newly formed Department of Children and Youth. We are going to give you more background on it, but I've been in this position for a year. I've been with the city for 13 years. I am Richmond born, Richmond raised, and so it is really an honor, truly, and a privilege for me to serve in this position and just even to work for the city of Richmond. Just a little bit about myself. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I have two little girls, 4 and 7, and so this work is also important for those reasons. And I want to also take a moment to thank my wonderful team. They are all here, and one person is not here. But I just want to start out by thanking David Padilla. He has been awesome. He's been with me from actually, he was working for the department before I was even appointed. So thank you, David. He is our one full-time staff person for the department. And Leticia Carpenter, she also was here before me. She serves at she started as an intern. She's a UC Berkeley graduate student in planning. And she and David helped do the first presentation to the city council about the oversight board and did a lot of research on other oversight, Department of Children and Youth departments. And so I just want to thank both of them because they've been with me for the longest. And then Patrick Seals behind me. Wave, Patrick. he works in the city attorney's office. He is a full-time city of Richmond employee, but he works with the department part-time. Guadalupe Morales. She works for the Department of Community Services Department, and she's a full-time City of Richmond staff person, but works part-time with the department also. And we have Sarah Farrell. She is an intern. She's getting her master's degree at UC Berkeley, her master's in social welfare from UC Berkeley, and so she'll be with us. She's doing her placement here with us. And then we have another woman by the name of Anna Leversey, and she is a fellow. She works... she's a fellow doing some work for us around data and looking at evaluation for the oversight for the Department of Children and Youth and the Fund. And she's also a master's student in social welfare. So I want to thank, they've been awesome and I've been doing a great job in getting us to where we are today. I also want to thank a lot of community-based organizations and city departments that are not here, but they have met with us and been really great partners. So I want to thank them. And then finally, just want to thank all of you again. So we had 44 applicants, and you all were selected. We had a really great group of applications that came in, and so it's just really a privilege that all of you are here tonight. Thank you for taking your time out of your busy schedules to be with us, and we're excited to take this journey together. It will be a journey. You are really here at the forefront of developing this department, and we are excited about the work we're going to do together to really support the young people in Richmond from zero, from birth to 24, and making sure we really want to move the needle in outcomes and how young people are supported in this city. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to David, and thank you.
Okay, and sticking with item A, we will now begin with roll call. At this time, I ask if every board member can switch up the microphone to turn it on. I will call your name. Once I call your name, please state present or here if you are in attendance. If I mispronounce your name, please let me know, and for future meetings, we'll definitely make sure to take account of that. Please note that in accordance with Measure E, Section 7, the first official meeting of the Oversight Board may occur when at least 10 members have been appointed and are present. So I will now begin roll call. Board Member Alvarado. Board Member Dandy Evans. Board Member Anyana?
Here.
Board Member Galloway?
Here.
Board Member Godinez? Here. Board Member Hegstrom?
Here.
Board Member James?
Here.
Caprice. Board Member Johnson?
Johnson.
Board Member Catherine Lee?
Here.
Oh, here, okay. Board Member Lobos?
Here.
Board Member Menzibal? No, absent. Board Member Ochoa? Absent. Board Member Kader? Board Member Madija Kader?
Here.
And Board Member Stephanie Sequeira? Okay. With that, two board members are absent, Board Member Menzibal and Board Member Ochoa. For the record, those two board members are absent, and a total of 12 board members are present, which constitutes this as the first meeting of the Oversight Board. Moving to item B, agenda review and modifications. Are there any modifications that would like to be made to the agenda by the board? Board Member Hegstrom?
Can you tell me where the agenda is? Because I'm not finding it.
Oh, yes. In the binder, under the tab, and I believe it's the last tab titled Agenda Materials. It should be the first page after the tab Agenda Materials. Okay, hearing none. Department staff is recommending that Agenda Item F2 be moved to go after Agenda Item F5, which is the action item regarding co-chairs. At this time, a motion is recommended by any board member to have Agenda Item F2. If that is requested.
For motion to approve?
Yes.
I motion.
Okay. Board Member Sequeira? Is there a second to motion?
I'll second.
Okay. Board Member Hegstrom?
All in favor?
Yes, so all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, please say nay. Please state if you'd like to have... was there any nay?
Aye.
Okay. Any abstain, please say abstain. Okay. The motion is approved with none abstaining. Moving to item C, welcome and introductions. We'd like to now open the space up for each of the department staff, but also the oversight board members. I'd provide a brief 30-second introduction that includes your name, but also a fun fact about yourself. We'll go in order of seating, beginning from this direction, moving across here, unless there's another preference. We also want to let the board know that, as a notice, 30 meetings prior to every board meeting, we will have food available in the back, and we'll make sure to let the board know ahead of time as well. We also have a form that is required to be signed that is an oath of allegiance that we'd like you to sign and return when you're able to do so, and we provide that later as well. But right now, we'd like to move forward with introductions, and yeah.
My name is Giselle Alvarado, and a fun fact about me is that I have a twin brother.
In the introduction, that's all we wanted to say, is our fun fact? Or can we say a little bit about who we are?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay. My name is Kristen, and I have two daughters. My older daughter is 24, and my younger daughter is 14. I also have a 3-year-old granddaughter. And my older child is thriving and is quite spectacular, especially considering that she was addicted to drugs as a teenager. So I went through that journey. And then I decided at 50 years old to go to college for the first time. And I'm just completing a program at Contra Costa College to become a substance use disorder counselor myself. And I've been on the advisory board of a nonprofit called Support for Recovery here in Contra Costa County that works closely with the Division of Behavioral Health called Alcohol and Other Drugs. And so I wear a few hats, but first and foremost, I'm a recovery advocate, and I decided to become a counselor to help other families with teens in crisis. So thank you. It's nice to meet everyone. Fact yet. I'll have to think about my fun fact.
My name is Kalia. I attend Oakland Military Institute in Oakland. And fun fact about me is I work with the Richmond Explorers.
Hi, everyone. Good evening. My name is Madiha. Hello? Yes. Okay. My name is Madiha Kader, and I work at Kiberia Schools, mainly that's located in Oakland. I am I have three kids, very fun ages of 14, 10, and 6. So really excited to be here and serve on the board.
My name is Caprice. I'm a mom. I have twins. A fun fact about me is I was the first IT technician to be hired at Aspire. So I'm the only computer tech there. That's a girl.
My name is Carol. I'm also a parent of twins, but mine are grown up. I have two grandchildren. I'm delighted that the city of Richmond voted to have all this money for children, and I can't wait to start spending it on great programs.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Tiana Galloway. I am a Richmond resident. Fun fact about me, the first time I was behind this podium, I was a public policy intern some years ago, and feels good to be on the other side making a difference. So I'm glad to be here.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Stephanie Cicada. I'm a mom of four. Ages, yesterday turned 14, a couple more weeks will turn 13, 11-year-old and a 4-year-old. I think my favorite hobby is going to meetings. So this marks another one.
Hello, my name is Guadalupe Niana, and I'm also a mother of four boys, oldest 21, the youngest is eight. A fun fact about me. So I was born in Berkeley, but I lived in Richmond all my life. So I was born and raised in Richmond, attended a lot of the West Contra Costa Unified School District schools. So I've been to many of the schools, and a fun fact would be that I really am invested into making sure our community thrives and that our children are at the forefront of it all.
Hi, everybody. How everybody doing? My name is Yante. I've been a resident, born in Berkeley, grew up in Richmond my whole life. My family from New Orleans. I guess I'm just somebody who's just trying to stay just out the streets and stay positive and productive and do something with myself besides what's expected, how I'm looked at, but just try to do the right thing and stay in stuff like this. Just keep myself, keep myself focused. Thank y'all.
My name is Angel Godinez. I'm in college. I'm a barista at Starbucks. I enjoy that. I like to, invest in people, like the bonds that you make with people, relationships, and I was hoping I could make some here.
Hi, everyone. My name name's Catherine. I'm a Richmond youth organizer for Asian Pacific Environmental Network. I also used to be a barista, but my fun fact is that I have two cats.
Hello, everyone. I think now the department staff will go. My name is David Padilla. My fun fact is, well, I've been working, I've been interning with City of Richmond since 2016, and just recently went full-time in May, and I graduated from UC Berkeley.
LaShonda White again. Let's see. My fun fact is, or something people may not know about me, I did martial arts for like 10 years of my life growing up. Don't mess with me.
Hi, everyone. I'm Letitia Carpenter. I'm from South Carolina, and I've broken my ankle 5 times.
Oh, wow. Same ankle?
Better now.
Hi, Guadalupe Morales. My fun fact, I did not as much as you, but I did Taekwondo for 3 years, so you definitely beat me there.
My name is Patrick. I work here in the city. I've worked here for 13 years, born and raised. I think a fun fact is that I don't believe anyone loves Richmond more than I do. I am 100% committed to what we do here and the people that we serve and the people that I work with. And I just want to let you know that I believe we as staff are committed to supporting you. So if there's ways that we can do that, please let us know.
Hi, my name is Sarah Farrell. I am an East Coast transplant and am loving the Bay, so I will probably be sticking around for a very, very long time, which makes my family a little sad, but I love it here. Fun fact about me, when I was living in Washington, D.C., we were organizing to get the NEAR Act passed, which was actually modeled after Richmond's Office of Neighborhood Safety and a lot of their programs. And so when I moved out to Berkeley and realized how close Richmond was, I was like, oh, snap, I need to learn from the awesome organizing that's happening in Richmond. So, yeah, I'm excited to be here.
And Giselle, if you want to say a little extra about yourself, I know you just had a fun fact. By all means, do so. No pressure.
I'm currently a high school student, and I hope to study law.
Okay, thank you, everyone. So moving on to item D is public forum. There are no speakers to speak on public forum at this time, but I also just want to let the board know that community members from the Richmond and North Richmond community members are always welcome to address the board, and they're allowed up to 3 minutes. Moving to item E, which is consent calendar, there's none. Moving to item F, oversight board as a whole. The first item, F1, receive a presentation regarding the Richmond Department and Fund for Children and Youth. And it will be LaShonda White and Letitia Carpenter.
It's me again. So right now, Letitia and I are going to provide a general overview of the department and the fund for children and youth, and then we'll be available to answer any questions that you may have. And we're hoping this provides just a general background of what we've done so far and where we're moving in the future. So in terms of the agenda, we're going to go over the Kids First Initiative, tell you a little bit more about Measures E and K, also talk to you about the department and our role and responsibility, as well as giving you some information about the fund that will be started in fiscal year 2021. You are the Oversight Board, but we're going to give you some information about some of your roles and responsibilities, and then talk to you about the outreach we've done so far, and some of our collaborations that currently exist. And then we'll go over the timeline and open it up for Q&A. So the purpose of the Kids First Initiative that was approved by voters in 2018 is various different purposes, but it really is to establish a sustainable funding stream, and that will help fund youth-serving organizations that can be both community-based organizations or governmental entities such as the city or the school district, often in partnership with CBOs that serve both Richmond and North Richmond residents, and between the ages of birth to 24. The fund is set up to ensure that the physical, emotional, and mental health of youth are that it's in place, and we want to. The fund is also helping to fill any gaps that will exist in the services, and we want to leverage other resources so that it's not just the fund that's supporting these programs. Make sure there's equitable distribution of resources to all young people in Richmond. Strengthen the assets that already exist here in Richmond. And then we want to supplement rather than supplant existing funding or programs. So once the fund is started, it can't, for example, if the city of Richmond is spending $3 million on services to young people, we can't take the money from the Richmond Fund for Children and Youth and then use that money instead of City of Richmond funds. We still have to provide support that we were already providing to that population. So just a little background, Measures E and K, which is known as the Kids First Initiative, was on the ballot and was approved by Richmond voters on June 5th, 2018. That measure established both the Department of Children and Youth as well as the Fund for Children and Youth. So we're going to talk about both of those. It also established the 15-member oversight board, and it dictated that it must be made up of both youth, and that is anyone between the age of 15 and 24, as well as adults. And this is the only board in the city of Richmond where that's mandated. It also requires that a portion of the general fund, so we'll talk about that, that the revenue for the city's general fund be set aside to fund youth programs and services to that population between birth and 24. And then there was, but both Measure E and K were on the ballot at the same time, that wasn't the initial plan, but that's what happened, and so we're going to Measure K acted as a revision to the original Measure E. So Measure E set everything up, but what Measure K did, because Measure E was actually supposed to be on the ballot in 2016, a lot of community-based organizations got together and really hit the streets to get to write the Kids First Initiative Measure E, and then to get signatures to get it on the ballot. It didn't make it on the ballot in 2016, so that provided some additional time for both the community-based organizations, the city, unions got together to figure out how we could revise Measure E because there were some concerns that some people had. So Measure K was drafted, and it revised Measure E, and these are the main ways in which Measure E was revised. So Measure K pushed the start date from 2016-17 fiscal year 2 years later to fiscal year 2018-19, so that was last year. It also removed the requirement that public agencies had to work with CBOs or nonprofits. The only way the city or the school district or the county could access any of the funds, didn't matter which department or what type of services you provided, was that you had to work with a nonprofit. Now, some public agencies don't have to work with community-based organizations such as the Community Services Department in the City of Richmond. It can apply for funding on its own, whereas there's other, like the school district has to do it in partnership and collaboration with community-based organizations. So it removed the requirement that all of them had to. It also removed the 20% cap on eligible funds. So Measure E said of all the money that's available, public agencies can only receive 20%. That is no longer the case with Measure K. It came around, and so now that cap is removed, and so public agencies along with community-based organizations will have equal access to the funding. It'll be up to the oversight board as well as to make that determination about who receives funding. And then it added the condition that the funding for the fund would be contingent upon the passage of a general tax measure. So part of the issue that some people had was, or the concern was, wondering how's the city going to pay for this this fund. So the next slide tells you, or a few slides later tells you, or shows you how money from the general fund will be allocated to support the Department of Children and Youth and the Fund for Children and Youth. And it's millions of dollars, right? So it'll top out at 3% of the general fund, which could equate right now to about $5 million. So there was some concern because it's been harder and harder every year for the city to meet its budget requirements and balance its budget. And so there was a condition that stated that there would be a general tax measure, which was Measure H, which came on the ballot in November of 2018, that it would be an extra tax that would help offset or fully fund this fund. And Measure H is called the documentary transfer tax, and it taxes any property. It adds a tax to the property, any property sold that are over $1 million in Richmond. It adds a documentary transfer tax to that, or additional documentary transfer tax. I wanted to tell you a little bit about the department. So we worked really hard with some community-based organizations in the beginning months of the department being established to really think through what are some of the roles that the department could have. And so this is a combination of what's included in both Measures E and K, as well as just some other roles that we think we should play. So we will be a supporter. We provide support to the Oversight Board with regards to recruitment, retention, training, agenda setting, meeting facilitation, et cetera. We also are a funder. So once the fund is established, is started in 2021, we will help in collaboration. All of this is in collaboration with the board, develop and administer the grant program. We're a convener. So we also want to provide space for city departments, as well as others, to have connections and have conversations about the services they're providing to Richmond residents. And so one thing that we've connected with our city departments about is how can we hold a space for them. So we have our community services department, our Office of Neighborhood Safety, library services, and employment and training, which are our four departments in the city that provide direct services to young people. So the Department of Children and Youth doesn't provide direct services, but how can we support City of Richmond service providers so that they can connect and make sure they're talking and on the same page about how they deliver service to our Richmond residents, and then also making sure we have opportunities to collaborate with other governmental entities such as the school district. So we're working on having those meetings now. Talked about we want to be a collaborator with other governmental entities, as well as CBOs and the philanthropy world, as well as other community-based organizations to support this work. We want to advocate for funding. We want to advocate for services to young people and really serve as that role in that role. We will administer the program in alignment with board direction, as well as what Measures E and K state. And then we have to evaluate. So we'll be an evaluator. We have to evaluate how well our department is doing, as well as how well the fund is doing in providing funding to organizations that provide services to this population. This shows you what our department structure looks like. The Richmond community is at the top. Richmond City Council appoints the 15-member oversight board, and the oversight board provides direction to the department and support in developing the community needs assessment and other projects. The Department of Children and Youth, per the measure, sits within the city manager's office. And I am the director. I'm administrative chief, serving as the director for the Department of Children and Youth. As stated, we have one full-time FTE and one full-time staff person, David Padilla. But then we also have support from interns that are here for us a specific amount of time, as well as staff support from other city department staff, from the city attorney's office, community services, finance, and city manager's office. So the fund for children and youth, this shows you how the funding is allocated per Measures E and K. So last fiscal year, when the department was established, it was mandated that $250,000 from the city's general fund be set aside to support the development of the department. And for those, and I apologize, I should have added a slide about this, but the general fund is a pot. Just imagine it being a pot of money where different revenue is collected, and its property taxes go into the general fund, utility user tax, so taxes for PG&E and cable go into that, documentary transfer tax, sales tax when you buy anything. So it's where a lot of our revenue goes into, and it helps provide services to the majority of city departments, police, fire, city manager's office, IT, finance. And so that pot of money is where the money for the fund comes from. And so it was last fiscal year, we had $250,000 that was allocated. The current fiscal year, which starts in July, ends in June of every year, is $700,000. So over 2 years, we have $950,000 allocated to the department to help pay for staff and consultants. We'll talk about that a little later. Next year, there's a gap year. So you see there's nothing there. So it's on purpose. They did not allocate any funding to the department next year, which means that we have to make sure that $950,000 will be enough to cover the current year as well as next year, because we're not going to go back and ask the general fund for any additional funding to support staff or pay for consultants. The actual fund, that pot of money that this body will help give out to organizations, doesn't start till 21-22. So I apologize. I think I've been saying 2021. The fund starts in fiscal year 21-22. So that's in 2 more years. So July 1 is when you'll have funding available to give out to through a grant program to organizations and community-based organizations and city departments or governmental entities that provide services to the population. In that first year, it's in 21-22, it starts out at 1% of the general fund. If we took today's general fund, it's about $165 million. That's what our general fund is today. It will probably be more than that in 2 years. But if we take today's dollars, I just want to give you a sense of how much money you'll be working with. 1% is about $1.65 million that'll be allocated to this fund to then give out to organizations. In fiscal year 22-23, it moves up to 2% of the general fund. So now you're looking at $3.3 million. Then 3% of the general fund in 23-24, almost $5 million. So, and that's where it'll stop at 3% until the measure sunsets, and then it has to go back to the ballot again, or the city council can agree to reauthorize the measure. So at the end of the day, on an annual basis, it'll be $5 million that will be able to be given out by this board to nonprofits and community-based organizations and departments. And the Department of Children and Youth gets to keep 10%. So there's a 10% for oversight, for overhead, and the other 90% goes back out to the community. This gives you a list of the different eligible uses of the fund. So once we start to give out money, these are the different areas in which we can give money to organizations that provide support to young people. And it really ranges, as you can see, from violence prevention to health and well-being to outdoor education. Organizations that can access the fund, as I stated, are public agencies or nonprofits. It's to support young people living in both Richmond and unincorporated North Richmond. And then the fund prioritizes three groups, 0 to 12, 13 to 17, and then disconnected young people from 18 to 24 years old. And I'm going to pass it over to Leticia.
Hello, all. So now I'm going to talk about the Oversight Board specifically. The next couple slides will discuss how the Oversight Board was laid out in Measures E and K. So 15-member Oversight Board, which all of you are a part of, it was mandated that two appointees from each, so the city council members to appoint two people, one of which had to be between the ages of 15 to 24, and one of which had to be over 24 years old. The mayor was allowed three appointees, and at least one of those had to be between the ages of 15 and 24. And it was stated in the measure specifically that the Oversight Board shall meet a minimum of 6 times per year, and later in the meeting we'll discuss how this schedule is going to play out in collaboration with you all. This is just a map of where you all exist in Richmond. And to show you some of the diversity that we have on the board. Like LaShonda mentioned earlier, the pool of applicants that applied were very diverse in forms of geographic diversity, which was also mandated in the measures. And so are you all. So it was mandated that the people that sit on this board represent all of Richmond and North Richmond, so not just one neighborhood would be represented, but that we have views from across the cities. This is just a breakdown. 10 neighborhood councils are represented, 5 oversight board members are a parent of Richmond youth, 2 local high schools are represented, multiple languages are represented by you all, Their educational backgrounds range from high school students to PhD degrees, and the gender identities include 11 females and 3 males. So you all are a great group of diverse people, and we're excited about that. In the measure specifically, these are the roles that were spelled out. So you all are will be responsible for developing policies and procedures for how you will convene yourselves in the work that you will be doing, ensure that the fund is managed in a manner accountable to the community, assist in the development of the community needs assessment, which we will talk about a little later, and also that will lead into the strategic investment plan, which will spell out how the fund will be allocated for 3 years, and reviewing grant applications and providing funding recommendations when that time comes. So the community needs assessment, we have been working on that really since day one, but we really ramped up over the summer research on what a needs assessment is. We're working with Oakland Fund for Children and Youth in San Francisco, who've been doing this for some years now, to get ideas from them about how we can do this in the best way and get some best practices. And we will be hiring a consultant, which you'll hear about later in the meeting today, to do that. In the measure itself, it laid out that a needs assessment must happen in order to inform a strategic investment plan, and here are some of the highlights of that. So we will be attempting to identify gaps in services and address them with the funds available. Each plan will set forth funding priorities for a 3-year period, and the initial plan will be approved, like mandated by the measure, must be approved by December 30th of 2020, and funding must begin to be given out by the middle of the next year, 2021. This is some background on some of the outreach and meetings and collaborations that LaShonda was talking about earlier that we've been doing. We started this work by working really closely with a lot of the nonprofits and CBOs that were involved in the Kids First Initiative to get their expertise and background on how to continue the awesome work they had already been doing. We've also been in collaboration with other government entities and foundations because, as we mentioned, we also hope to leverage other funding so that it's not just this fund that's supporting the work in Richmond and North Richmond. These are some specific ways that we've been collaborating. So we established a service provider working group that is open to any organization that provides youth services in Richmond or North Richmond. We will be convening them a quarterly basis, and I think our next meeting is Thursday, so that's exciting. We also are partnering with YPLAN, which is an organization through UC Berkeley that works in Kennedy High School. So there's Kennedy High School students right now working to come up with best practices for how to engage youth through the community needs assessment process and ensure that their voice is heard in that process. We have hosted community meetings and will continue to do that through the process of the needs assessment. We are bringing together different interdepartmental collaboration, and we also are working to connect departments in the city of Richmond with service providers to create a better line of communication between all organizations serving youth. We've done community outreach. For all summer, we were doing it mainly around oversight board, but we'll continue to do that in regards to the community needs assessment and strategic investment plan. And we're working with the school district to create a better connection or build the connection that already exists between the department, the board, and the school district. This is a tentative timeline for how we will continue to do the work that we've been doing. November 5th, you all were selected to serve on the oversight board. We're having our first board meeting now. The needs assessment process will start this month and go until May 2020 with a consultant being brought on hopefully sometime in February to help with that work. The strategic investment plan development will follow the needs assessment because it's based on the needs assessment. It has to be approved by December 2020, and grant application will be released by January. That's also mandated in the measure. And as I said, in June or July, I can't remember right now, July 2021, funds must start to be given out to youth-serving organizations. This is some contact information. You all have this printed out also, but if you want to take a picture or just have this on hand, if you need to contact us, you can email the email listed above or call the phone number. LaShonda's email's on here, and so is David's, and we'll talk more later about how to stay in good communication with each other.
That concludes our presentation, and we are available to answer any questions you may have on measures E and K, oversight board roles and responsibilities, the department, the fund. David will call.
Board Member Hextrom.
You said that the measure will have a sunset date. How many years is it until that happens?
I would have to do some math. So it's a 10-year measure. Do you know exactly?
No, I just know 2028.
2728. That's what I...
Okay.
February, then, yeah. Fiscal year 2728.
Only 10% is allowed for overhead, but that doesn't include the first 2 years of funding that are there.
Correct. So the first allocations last year and this year, that total $950,000, are specifically to develop and establish the department and to do the work needed to do a community needs assessment and a strategic investment plan so we can use that money to fund staff as well as consultants. So it does not, the 10% is not necessary, is not what we have to abide by in this current fiscal year.
And do you think that's enough money?
So 10% of 1 point.
No, I'm talking about the first two.
We are going to make it enough money. Any other questions?
The consultant that you guys said that we're going to hire in February, will that be us as a board looking at applications, or how is that going to be chosen?
That's a really good question. We have an item on it a little later in tonight's agenda, but the staff has worked to develop an RFP, which is a request for proposals in-house, and so we'll release that. We're going to just let you know tonight that we're going to release it this week, but the board will be a part of the process in selecting the consultant. I know it's a lot of information. I know we're here tonight, but you also have our contact information. So if there's additional questions that you feel more comfortable asking one-on-one, we're happy to answer them later.
Can I ask one more? So on Measure K, it took away the 20% cap on eligible funds for public agencies. Can you describe what public agencies are?
Yes. So public agencies, examples are the City of Richmond, the school district, Contra Costa County. Public serving organizations, governmental organizations.
One more. The meeting you have on Thursday, are we welcome to join, or is that just for, I don't know who you said that was for specifically?
Oh, the service provider working group meeting, that's Thursday. The one thing we have to be careful about is having more than a quorum of board members anywhere, right? Otherwise, we need to agendize it. So it's not that you – do you want to say something? I hear him, but he won't come to the mic.
Patrick Seals. As LaShonda's pointing out, you are welcome, but as she pointed out, there has to be less than a quorum present. So up to 7 of you, if you were available, could attend. If more than 7 of you attended this meeting, we would have to have an agendized meeting. I would have to create an agenda and then publish it, right? And if we didn't do that, we would be in violation of the Brown Act, which I will be talking about to you later.
So the answer is yes, but we have to be very thoughtful. If people want to come, if you could raise your hand, maybe let us know so we know who is going to show up, but that'll be a quarterly meeting, and that's on Thursday. And then on Wednesday, I just want to point out, we're having 60 Kennedy High School students that will be here with us. They're going to start here in the chambers. They're the Y Plan students who will be working to help us determine how to outreach to young people and for our community needs assessment, but we're doing a full day. They're doing a site visit, so they're going to come here, we're going to talk to them about City Hall, and then they get to go and visit RISE and Pogo Park and the Greenway. And so it's going to be a fun day. This is a busy week for us. Wednesday. So that is all day. They'll be here in the chambers from 9:30 to 11, and then they'll go to Rise and to Unity Park later in the day. So if people are interested, please let us know. Like, you can email us, let us know, because we do not want to have more than 8 of you present.
For Wednesday and Thursday.
Wednesday, anywhere.
Anytime.
I mean, if you just show up somewhere on your own, everybody at Juneteenth, I can't stop you. That's different. But since this is an actual, you know, event that we're telling you about that's in collaboration, coordination with the department, we have to make sure that more than 8 of you don't, or we will have to agendize it. If you tell us now, then I guess we just need to agendize it, that it's an actual meeting.
You guys, I heard something about Pogo Park. Yeah, that's like, I was a part, that's actually my street where I'm from, A Street.
Okay.
So, like, I was a part of that whole little magic little scene.
It is a magic scene. It's a magic place.
I just got excited. So I just, was that going to be on Wednesday or?
You guys are really excited about this one. Yes, so that's Wednesday. What we will do is we will send out an email to everyone with both of those items, both of those events, and if people can let us know. If you plan on attending, that would be really helpful for us.
I for surely am. Yeah, that's.
You want to go to the poll? Okay.
I forgot. Should I talk about the researcher people?
Yeah.
Cool. I forgot about a collaboration when I was talking, and I just want to point it out because someone's here and taking their time to show up to the meeting. We have 6 UC Berkeley students doing research right now for us on the community needs assessment, and they'll be presenting to us soon. Best practices to move forward so that we can start doing work before we have a consultant, to make sure that when the consultant comes, they're ready to go and do the best work in the short amount of time that they're going to have. So,
are there other schools besides Kennedy that are participating in the community needs assessment thing? Or just Kennedy is the only, the
White Plan? Right now, Kennedy is the only one. So, White Plan, so the Center for Cities and Schools is a partnership that the city of Richmond has had with UC Berkeley for 10, 12 years. And so they'll bring projects to us. And Y-Plan, the initial one was to work at Kennedy, but then there also were plans to do something at Richmond High. But I don't, that one hasn't materialized. So right now it's just Kennedy High School. But I do want to say, as board members and the staff, we are open if people have connections and they want us to reach out, and if you have connections with teachers or anyone, like, please let us know. We're happy to reach out.
Connection in what sense?
If you have for example, there's the reason why Y-Plan works is because there are professors or teachers at Kennedy or Richmond High who know this process and want to work with the city, and so it's easier for the Center for UC Berkeley Center for Cities and Schools to come into the high school and work with the teacher. But so if you know a teacher that may want us to, we can come in and present about the community needs assessment or the Department of Children and Youth, or, you know, if there's a special project that some, you know, a teacher has with their students around in their government class. Like, we're happy to connect.
And just to point out, Kennedy High School is the only place that Y-Plan is happening, but that's not the only high school that will be involved in the community needs assessment process. That's just the group right now that's working on it, because the connection was already made. But we will be engaging as many youth as possible during the needs assessment.
Yes, yeah. Correct.
So I have, I'm just trying to get an idea of how exactly the funding is going to work. So it has to be an organization that applies for a grant. Is that they write up a grant and then we fund it? Or can, for example, if people want to go to summer camp, can a kid put in an application and say, I want to go to this summer camp somewhere that's, you know, a music camp or whatever it is. It's already an organization that's there, but they're not writing a grant. The kid is.
So part of, I understand. Part of the work that this board will do is to help establish guidelines for how to give out the funding. So I have not, as staff, we haven't determined what it is. The idea, how the other departments of children and youth function in San Francisco and Oakland is through a competitive grant process, so that it's fair. And so my assumption is that's more than likely how our program will also work, but there could be other things that this board would like to do. So later on, after we do our community needs assessment and our strategic investment plan, those two documents and that process will help identify where are the needs in Richmond. It'll help determine where do you want to put your money. And then from there, you'll develop some guidelines around how you're going to give out that money. But that won't happen until after the strategic investment plan is done.
But we want to target every child in Richmond somehow. That's our target, right? Is to not just one group or whatever. We want to get across the board, every child.
So the fund, the eligible uses for the fund really is for zero or birth to 24. And there's a bunch of different eligible uses that we described. However, what's going to come out of the community needs assessment and the strategic investment plan, it might say you can fund all of these different things, but we realize that mental health services for young people is a gap in Richmond, and it really is a gap for the 13 to 17 year old population. And we realize that there's a gap for outdoor education and recreation for 0 to 5. I'm making this up, right? But that's what's going to come out of the strategic investment plan. So the community is going to help determine what are the gaps, and so that will determine what you're going to fund. So you're not going to fund everything. But in that first three-year period for that strategic investment plan, the strategic investment plan will say or determine, dictate that you're going to fund these three or four categories for these different age groups, and then that's where you put your money. And then you do the plan and the community needs assessment process again, and then you'll come out with another group of strategies. So it'll be based on what comes out of the community needs assessment and strategic investment plan.
Some youth may not get served at all, and others may get that need it will get more.
Correct. Yes. And we have when we talk more about the community needs assessment, strategic investment plan process, and the RFP, we have a good visual that shows you how I think it's either San Francisco or Oakland, how their funding looks, and so you can see for different funding, it may be 0 to 5 because it's early childhood versus, you know, disconnected youth, it'll be 18 to 24. So it just will depend on what the strategy is.
No, you're right. And one other clarifying detail, the measure does also specify specific priority populations, some of whom are young people, teens aged up to 24, who are also parents, families. Undocumented youth, LGBTQ youth, system-involved youth are in the foster care system or are currently or formerly incarcerated youth. So there's a list of priority populations, recognizing that different young people need different services and needs, and that's where the money should be focused.
Yeah, I read some of this earlier today. So Measure E, in our notebook on page 4, there's list of eligible uses that I found helpful to kind of help me understand what our goals are. Violence prevention, response, education, job training. There's like a list.
Yeah. Yes. It's the same list that's here, but in the actual measure, which is good for everyone to read, it gives you a little more information about what the authors of the measure meant by these different uses. Thank you.
If there's no other discussion, we will continue moving forward. There was no speakers for this item F1. We've delayed item F2 and are now moving to item F3. Receive the Richmond Fund for Children and Youth Oversight Board Handbook. There are 0 speakers for this item.
Hello again. So, as you can already tell, there's a lot of information that is being provided to you tonight. And so we're hoping that this handbook will help you kind of act as a guide so you can understand not just how the department functions and its background and its context, but understand I guess in the sentence, contribute to the general knowledge and understanding of public affairs and to aid in identifying the scope and parameters of their roles and responsibilities. So there is more information here about like all the measures, measures E, K, and H. You also have the list of, you have contact info for other board members as well as staff. As you know, I think you were all reached out by someone who was on the staff, so they will be your primary person of contact. So again, if you guys have any questions at all, feel free to contact them and ask any questions. A lot of this is, you know, new for some folks, so it's a learning process, and we want to make sure that you are ready and you have your tools available to you and you can move through this process pretty effortlessly. So I mentioned, you have tabs for each of the sections. There's an About Us, and you saw a lot of these sheets and facts in the presentation, so they'll be in your handbook for your reference later on. I think you also have a hard copy of the presentation as well. But as I mentioned, you have all the contact info. We also have a general City of Richmond Boards, Commissions, and Committees handbook. So that's like a big general handbook we have there that you could use to peruse more of the official City of Richmond language and rules and procedures and all that. And I think there's also a copy of the Oath of Allegiance they have to do in there somewhere. But you guys, I think we'll provide another copy when that happens. So no need to go look for it. And as you know, as you obviously have noticed, there's a certain order when it comes to conducting meetings, rules you will have to start abiding by, like, you know, meeting more than seven people in one place. So there's more information on that there, Rosin's Rules of Order and a guide to the Brown Act, and Patrick will actually be giving you more details on that later on tonight. But I think that's it. And then other thing to note is that it's a binder for now, but we're hoping to give you more of a permanent bounded book. But because this is a living document, you know, this is the first time we have the board, we're going to be adding things to it. We're hoping it'll grow. So this will be temporary for now. And I think once we get more information and once we get things more settled down, we'll give you more of a permanent one later on the year. So please, later tonight, if you have some time or any time during the week before a meeting, feel free to look at it, read it over. If you have any questions, as we mentioned, please reach out to us. And we can clarify anything that you need. Any questions?
If there's no discussion, we will continue moving forward. There are no speakers for this item. We're now moving to item F4, receive a presentation on the requirement of the Ralph M. Brown Act and Rosenberg's Rule of Orders. There are zero speakers for this item.
Good evening, board members. Patrick Seals again, City Attorney's Office. So are you running this, David, or am I? Me? Okay. So this, typically the City Attorney's Office will provide 2-hour training on this type of stuff that I'm going to cover here in like 10 minutes. So consider this just an introduction, right? And I'm going to try to provide for you an overview and also to give you what you absolutely need to know immediately to proceed. And I think that at some point, I think either LaShonda or Leticia or someone will be speak about scheduling, maybe some future training, some more in-depth trainings about how to support you. But just for the time being, we're going to move through this as quickly as we can. So the Brown Act is meant to support or give guidance on a few different areas. One of them is meetings, right, which is what we're doing tonight. Noticing, so there are requirements as far as timelines, given that a meeting is a regular meeting, which is that it's scheduled and in the same place at the same time, or special, which is that it's off that schedule, whether or not public comment is allowed, and the timing and placement of that comment, and also closed session, but for your sake, it's not an issue. So the Brown Act, just to kind of read it to you, some general language here, it provides direction to all meetings for legislative bodies, which you are one, specifically for local agencies regarding public and open meetings, unless exceptions. And so the purpose is to conduct basically the duties and the responsibilities of the people. And in this particular case, the people, as it relates to you all, are the residents of Richmond.
So what is a meeting? So a meeting occurs when a majority of you all gather. And so just for the sake of your own information, and we'll get into it a little bit in Rosenberg's, the majority or quorum is a fancy word for that. A majority of you all is 8 because there are 15. So you have a quorum or majority when 8 of you have gathered, which is why there are certain rules that dictate how we notice and how you all can meet and when we notice. So there's also some instruction provided around communication. So during meetings, there is some direct communication that is provided, and you can use technology and also serial meetings. And so just to give you a little bit, so this would be a direct meeting. A serial meeting would be hypothetically if one of the board members called, so hypothetically board member Lee called board member Godinez, and Godinez contacted board member Johnson and played telephone. So you all didn't gather, but you all communicated, right? That is a meeting. And so if that happens, then noticing requirements need to be in place, right? And so there are certain things that have to gather. I'm going to move things. So what is unlawful? You can't have pre-meetings or post-meetings to kind of establish how you will or will not vote. Obviously, there can be discussions that are held, but a quorum of you cannot secretly meet without that information being noticed. And I've already addressed some of this. So here's some information as far as posting. Typically, things have to be posted 72 hours and 24 hours for special meetings. The language on the agendas needs to be expressly clear, right? So you can't say we'll discuss, for example, there's an issue about an RFP, which is just a fancy word for a contract or a job announcement. We're soliciting people. We couldn't say we're going to talk about ways to support the community needs assessment, and then we're actually talking about releasing an RFP, because the public then didn't know that that was actually going to be the discussion. And so agenda items need to be marked and made very clear. So this is what we took. So some very limited exceptions to some of this noticing is in the cases of health and safety emergencies, which may not fall within your purview, but typically for the city council, if there was a riot and they needed to make a decision about something, or there was some type of major health outcome or tragedy that needed to be decided, we could host a meeting with excluding some of these this noticing requirement. I'm moving very quickly. There are some penalties for that. And the records that we're creating that you all are part of now, are things that people can request information from. So someone can reach out to the city clerk's office, city attorney's office, and say, board member Galloway at this meeting? And what did member Galloway say at that meeting? They can request that information. Right? It's public. The comments that you make at this meeting are public. And so being aware of that is very, very important. The documents that we produce at this meeting are public, and they can be subpoenaed, which is basically a fancy word that is a order from a court to request documents. So Rosenberg's rules, and we'll move on. So the purpose of Rosenberg's rules, which you all have, it's 8 pages, but I'm going to try to cover it here in like 3 minutes. The purposes are really just to establish order and be as clear as possible. So it really is a mechanism or framework for managing all the things on the agenda in a consistent and orderly process, not only for you, but something that the public can anticipate with some consistency. It should be friendly. And what it does is Rosenberg's rules, what it does is it provides not only some support to the majority or quorum, but it also doesn't exclude the minority on a board from having an opportunity to speak and voice dissent. What is very important as it relates to Rosenberg's rules is the role of the chair, and that will be coming up here in just a moment. You all will have an opportunity to nominate either yourselves or another member of the board to serve as chair or co-chairs. It is very important that the chairperson or persons know the rules, right? And that could be something that myself and Erdeva can support you in gaining some more knowledge on. It is also the chair's responsibility to move the meeting, right? So it is the chair's responsibility to pay attention to time, how long discussion has been taking place, making sure that board members have had equal opportunity to speak on certain items, takes the lead or the role in facilitating or managing the meeting. Typically, the chairperson has a less active role in debate and will typically speak last, really making sure that there has been robust discussion, thorough discussion surrounding an item, and that at the end, if the chairperson has something to weigh in on, the chairperson will typically do it at that point. So in considering the roles and responsibilities, if you're thinking about serving, which I think it'd be a great idea, make sure that you're aware that there is some weight and responsibility that you take on. There are motions. So there are three motions that will typically happen. It's a basic motion, which is we would like to approve or move an item. There's also a motion to amend, and there are substitute motions. So hypothetically, if you wanted to approve a contract, you could make a motion to do that. There'd be a second. If someone disagreed, they could say, I'd like to make a substitute motion that we not approve contract A, but move contract B, right? So those are all opportunities that you have. And myself and our David staff liaisons, if there are questions that you have, you can raise them, right? If they're the issue, be confident in the fact that when things are happening, if you don't understand, you can raise a question. Excuse me, I don't understand. Excuse me, could we do this? Take the opportunity to speak up and voice your concern. All motions are due for debate, and in certain instances, you'll require more than a majority for an item. You'll require a supermajority, which is 2/3 of you, which is 10. So, and typically, those are going to be if you wanted to suspend rules, right? Or if you wanted to limit debate, right? If you didn't want people to talk about an item, you could do that. Finally, I will say this. The major consideration as far as Rosenberg's rules is to create an atmosphere where things are collegial or friendly, and that people speak one at a time, and that there's an opportunity for everyone to have a fair chance to share a perspective and be heard. So I will leave it at that. There was a lot more, but I think that that's gives you a basic understanding. And if there are questions, then I can take those.
So, in making the decision, is that something that we would do as a whole today? And is that like a voting system?
That's a great question. So, there are certain items that you will take action on, right? So, if you're looking at your agenda, the agenda is phrased in such a way, and I'm happy you asked that question, is phrased, certain items are phrased in such a way to let you know whether there's an action required. So the first words are all verbs. Receive, receive, received, elect, right? So elect lets you know that there is an action happening. Decide lets you know that there is an action happening, right? So decide and select. So we've capitalized some verbs for you to kind of give you a signal that either an action will be taking place on an item or won't be taking place. So you do have two actions, at least two tonight, where you will be taking a vote, right? And so on those items, David is going to say or offer up, is there a motion to, right, approve so-and-so? Is there a second, right? And then he will ask you all to vote in some manner, right? Whether that's, are there any objections? But yes.
Question. Yes. I know we're a 15-member body, but there's only 14 and one vacant. So quorum is still 8?
Great question. So the way that Rosenberg's rules work is that it speaks to the number in the body, right? Not the number present. So the body of the oversight board is 15, whether 15 are present or not, whether there are 15 field seats or not. It speaks to the number in the body. Now, this board may decide on a set of rules that are different from that, right? So it could be that this board decides, hey, we know the quorum is 8, but of the 8, we are going to allow for a majority of the 8 to vote versus if we only have 8 people, if we want to move something, it has to be an unanimous 8. So there could be a set of bylaws that the board could come up with, and we could talk about that later, to provide some more context to who you are personally and kind of allow you to create some more nuance and dexterity in the decisions that you come to.
So then we don't have a set of bylaws just yet.
No, ma'am.
And then another one. I know in our district meetings, usually we have to have documents translated just because of the percentage of the student or number of, if they speak a foreign language.
Yes.
City-wise, do we have anything that has any of those?
I'm going to default to David on that.
Yes. So aside from Department of Children and Youth, I also work on translation and our interpretation efforts. As a city, we're leaning towards moving so that that becomes less of a worry, especially for the non-English speaking people within Richmond, North Richmond. I know at least within the city, it is a standard that you can request, I believe, 72 hours prior beforehand. So that's something we're, especially within our board, if there's a member of the public that would like interpretation or translated documents, I think that we're trying to be as flexible as possible, and we look forward to seeing how that can be put into an actual policy. In the meantime, though, if community members or oversight board members request interpretation, we can provide that. We have the interpretation kits right here in case they are needed. So we're going to continue looking into that, too.
Just really quickly, with regards to the bylaws, that will be on a future agenda because this board will need to establish bylaws. So part of, I think, the wonderful work that you are able to do is to set the foundation for this board. So bylaws, mission, values, all of that. So we haven't determined any of that for you. We do have templates from San Francisco and Oakland that we can use as a starting place, but we will bring that back before you at a future agenda. A future meeting.
Yes, and I'll just finally say this. Just want to thank you all for taking the opportunity to serve, want to support you, and want to encourage you that part of the role of these rules is to encourage public input, right? And that public input is heard. So one thing I wanted to let you know, as far as the chair specifically, as we move forward in that decision, is that one of the things that the chair should do is tell the public what the body is getting ready to do, keep them informed during the process, and when the body has acted, to make clear to the public what the action was. All right? And so we are here to support you. If there are questions, please email me, pull me aside later, and I feel like in some future meetings, we'll probably do a little bit more in-depth workshop.
Who's taking notes?
So, great question. So, what we're doing is the reason that we all want your mics on is because we're recording this, right? So there will be an audio recording that will be placed on the website that people can listen to so that we don't have to do any transcription of the minutes. The minutes will be made, will be done action, right? So if people want to know in depth what board member Hegstrom said on that item, they may not get that detail in the minutes because there'll be action. It will say staff presented a presentation, so-and-so asked a question about this, so-and-so asked a question, and they move to the next item. If you want to know what Board Member Hegstrom said, you could all actually go and listen to the audio. But staff, liaisons, David and myself perhaps will be working on the minutes. Thank you.
Okay, and if there's no discussion, we'll continue moving forward. There are no speakers for this item. Moving to item F5, elect 2 oversight board members. 1 youth and 1 adult to serve an initial 1-year term as co-chairs. There are 0 speakers for this item. So as part of this item, a lot of this was looking at especially other similar departments, such as the Oakland Fund for Children and Youth and San Francisco Department of Children and Youth and their families. Yeah, understanding the importance of having co-chairs, especially having co-chairs that expresses and understands the power dynamic that is with having youth and adult on a board. So because of that, department staff is recommending that the oversight board elects 2 members to serve as co-chairs, both youth and adults. Per the agenda report, the chairperson shall preside at all meetings of the oversight board. The chairpersons are accountable to work with department staff in setting agendas for the oversight board meetings. Chairperson shall be elected by a majority of the oversight board. at its first regular meeting, and each chairperson shall serve a one-year term and cannot serve more than two consecutive terms as the co-chair. Additional rules and responsibilities of the co-chairs will be determined as part of the development of the bylaws, as we previously discussed. As a note, your first decisions as co-chairs will be selecting up to six board members to participate in a subcommittee to help select the consultant for requests or proposals, which will be discussed shortly in an additional item. Unless there's any questions, we can begin with the youth chairperson. That is the person, the co-chair, who will be between the 15 and 24 years of age. And I will now ask if there are any nominations for co-chair of the Oversight Board.
Any young person between the age of 15 and 24 interested in being a co-chair, you can nominate yourself. Feel free. I see some smiles. I don't know.
I'd like to nominate myself.
Is there a second?
I'd like to nominate myself.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to nominate myself as well.
Is there a second to nominate Board Member Lee? Board Member Hextrom, second.
Okay, so just to give you some direction. So in the nomination, if there isn't a second, then the nomination fails. Someone has to second a nomination before we can have another nomination.
Okay.
So
just to nominate.
Just nominate, okay. not necessarily to vote, right? So Board Member Lee nominated herself, and basically making a motion to nominate herself. And so for that to move forward, another board member would need to say, I second that motion. Board Member Hextrom seconded. So, is there another nomination for co-chair from the age group 15-24? And I believe Board Member Johnson said, I nominate myself. Is there a second?
I second.
Okay, so there was a second. Are there any other nominations for the co-chair 15-24? Okay, so the way that it works now is that we vote in reverse order. So we vote for Board Member Johnson's nomination, and then we also then vote. Then if Board Member Johnson's nomination passes, then Board Member Lee's nomination is then moot. It means that it does not pass. Okay. All right. I just don't want anybody to be in the dark. I appreciate you though for having my back. So,
would we like, I don't know if this, for Board Member Johnson or Lee
to speak,
to explain why you, since it's two board members who would like to serve as co-chair, to say a few words about why you're interested in serving as co-chair, and then that will help the rest of the body vote.
From my experience, a co-chair.
Oh, Board Member Johnson and then Board Member Lee.
From my experience, I'm just a part of this whole experience, just for the most part, just because, like I said in the beginning, I'm just here just to be a part of something. Like, my whole life growing up in Richmond, I've been a part of a lot of things, and nothing quite as I feel like as big and important as this. And I don't, like, before tonight, I didn't really know the whole surrealness of what this little thing that I'm in, everything, just life. I just want to learn and just grow to just something. I just want to do something. I just want to just be a part of just my community, just anyway. I don't know. I just want to do something besides what I was accustomed to. Whatever it takes, by any means.
Thank you, Board Member Johnson. Board Member Lee.
In 2016, I worked with RISE, and they were collecting petitions for the Richmond Kids First Initiative. And then I heard that they were, that the measures passed, E&K, and that they were accepting applications for this board. And I applied, and I'm happy to be here and just to be able to help be a part of the process from the beginning till now has been an honor. And yeah, I'd like to be co-chair.
So I might make a recommendation. Okay, so I'm going to make a recommendation. And the recommendation is this, is that we use a secret ballot. Is that okay? So that you all write your choice, right, on a piece of paper, and then pass it to David, and then he will read out this board member received this many votes, and then this board member received this for many votes, right? And I feel like that'll maintain the integrity of the process, and also I feel like promote some collegiality. If, with your permission,
Yes.
Okay.
Motion to approve.
So the names are Lee and Johnson?
Lee and Johnson. And then we can repeat that process for the chair. Leticia. Oh. I would just do the tally.
Yeah.
What happens if there's, it's 7-7.
Then we'll do it again.
As a result of the vote, board member Johnson receives 8 votes, and board member Lee receives 4 votes. As a result, board member Johnson is selected as one of the oversight board's co-chairs.
Okay. Congratulations. You can. And so at this point, we'll take nominations for co-chair for those individuals over 24.
I nominate myself. Motion to, what do we do?
No. So, say your last name for me.
Sequeira.
Okay, board member Sequeira. So, is there a second?
A second.
Okay. Board member Galloway also made a nomination. Is there a second? Okay.
I wasn't nominating myself.
No. Oh, I apologize. Okay, so I'm sorry. Okay, so who were you going to nominate? Oh, board member Inyane. So is there a second for that nomination? Okay, so we're good. So are there any other nominations for co-chair? Okay. So we'll do a ballot. Oh, you need to give a talk to us or share your interest in serving. And
okay.
Yes.
Tiana Galloway, Richmond resident. I currently am working as a reserve. I'm a police officer for the Richmond City, for the city of Richmond. And I also work as a jailer. My attention, my devotion are to these young kids who I have an interaction with, whether it's under unfortunate circumstances or right here in the streets, in which I also have the opportunity of working at PAL and doing public policy here for approximately 2 years with Councilmember Nat Bates. Everything outside of work is just devoted to these children, and it's great to actually give them an example that whatever path that they take, that there's always a better outcome. And that's my reason of wanting to serve on this board. And I don't know it all, but I'm pretty sure that that's why I have a pretty solid board behind me that can support anything that I need as well.
Okay, well, I think, well, why I want to chair this board is because I am a parent, and I've been really committed to this community throughout. You know, I was born and raised here in Richmond, and I think now as a parent, my involvement in the community, whether it be with city and local nonprofits, you know, just volunteering and supporting their movements, especially their leadership when it comes to youth, like the Rice Center, you know, actually living by example, and, you know, being able to support the youth, the adults, and, you know, Richmond as a whole, and now being able to kind of start, you know, this initiative. I worked a lot with the initiative when it was being brought up with RISE. So I'm actually a co-signer on the books to the ENK. And I think just, you know, the whole thing about being able to grow up in this community and now give back to it, supporting our youth, you know, as we get there, and then showing the community that we as residents, that we as parents, you know, no titles needed, can be here and can sit and be able to perform tasks and be able to really move Richmond in a positive direction. So I think that's why I want to serve here.
Thank you both.
Can you both repeat your names?
Galloway, Tiana.
Guadalupe Yana.
And for the record, who seconded Board Member Galloway's nomination?
I think three of us did.
Yes.
Okay. As a result of the voting, Board Member Galloway received 5 votes. Board Member Anyana received 6 votes.
Someone didn't.
One abstaining. I would also like to know at this point, because part of the agenda report, we did include that a majority, asked to be in favor of voting for the co-chair.
Yes. So, you
I didn't quite get the last name is the reason why I didn't vote because I wasn't sure what to put.
That's not a problem. The thing is that you need eight. So the last vote, they had eight, right? So the body is 15, and right now it's of the body. So you have to have eight votes. So we have to do it again. I'm sorry.
Okay. And is there a way to just write down their names so folks know? Looking at context.
So just for the record, abstaining is 100% okay. Board Member Johnson, I would say that just for your information, that was probably the right decision if you were unclear, right? It would be better not to vote, and you made the right choice. If you were unclear of something, either gain clarity or abstain and step back, that was actually the right choice to make in the context. I'm sorry. Okay.
We didn't have any scissors, excuse us.
Can I say something? On our slides, it says chairpersons shall be elected by a majority vote of the oversight board. It doesn't say a quorum.
The majority is the...
No, a majority just means one more than the other
guy. Right, so you have...
A majority. Okay, not a... Okay, it's more than
50%. Right, so you have 15-member board, so eight would be the majority.
Okay. Even though we only have 12.
So it's of the body, right? So your body is 15 members. Right. Now, when you create your bylaws, you all can change that, and I'm guessing you will. But as it stands right now, you have a 15-member body, so the majority of that body, even though 12 are present, is 8. He needs to call it out still.
Board Member Galloway receives 5 votes. Board Member Ayanna receives 7 votes.
So,
one more.
We can either do it again, unfortunately, or I don't know how you would feel about it. You may wish to table this vote, maybe to your end of your meeting, just so that you can hear some items, or you can continue, but you need 8, unfortunately. So, are you against 8? I mean, against another round. Okay. Do you want to? I was just inquiring as to whether they were against another.
Okay, so we're going to do one last. Hopefully, this is one last round because it is 8:18, mm-hmm. and we still have a few agenda items left. And want to try and get you out of here as close to 8:30 as possible. But we do want you to also select six board members, up to six board members, to participate on a subcommittee to help us select a consultant that's going to do some work for us. Let's quickly. We're going to do one more round. So it was 7-5. And if you don't mind, if you just don't fold them for us, it'll help us just turn them over. So when we collect them, it'll be faster.
There were four votes for board member in Galloway, seven votes for board member in Yana, and one vote for board member Cicada.
Can I just ask, did someone vote for board member Cicada by accident?
Yeah, by accident.
Okay.
I didn't know the name of the person that was.
Guadalupe, I'm going to say your last name wrong.
Lupe Inyana.
Inyana?
Inyana.
And that's not right, but that's who you meant to?
Yeah.
Okay.
I capitulated.
You're fine. So your just for the record, your vote that you wrote down for so board member Hegstrom's vote for board member Sakira was incorrect, and it should be for board member
Inyana.
Inyana. Thank you.
All right.
So now we have 8-4 board member Inyana.
Mm-hmm.
And so she will be the co-chair.
All right.
So thank you to board member Galloway. Thank you to board member Lee for nominating yourselves and all of you for this work. All right. So with that being said, our co-chairs are now leading the meeting. Are you guys ready? Or you want us to continue for this meeting? Okay. We will do that.
Okay, and there were no speakers on that item. So next, we'll be moving to item F2, receive an update on a request for proposals to be released on December 5th, 2019, to hire a consultant to support the Richmond Department of Children and Youth Department in conducting a community needs assessment and draft a strategic investment plan and select up to six oversight board members to participate in a subcommittee to help select the consultant. There are zero speakers for this item.
Can we get a clarifying question? The six members, does that include automatically the chairs? So
it does not have to include the chairs.
I didn't know if they were automatically in.
No.
Do we need a, should we take a motion now to extend the meeting? So the meeting's supposed to end at 8:30. We do have, this is a major item, and F2 and F6 are two items where you have to take action.
I'll move we extend to 9 and hopefully get done sooner.
I second that.
Are there any objections?
I have school in the morning.
Understood. So we're going to try and get through this really quickly. And if anyone needs to leave, please do so.
I will try to be engaging and keep y'all awake, okay?
So we're going to go through this relatively quickly.
All right, so you've heard, this is going to situate and help try to explain what it is that we're going to be doing over the next year and a half. What, as LaShonda mentioned earlier, you heard about the budget, so that $950,000 for those first 3 years. What are we even doing with that money? How are we going to go about this process? What is this community needs assessment we're talking about? All of that will hopefully be clarified. So what we're bringing to you all today is to let you know about a request for proposals called an RFP that we are going to be releasing later this week. That is an official city process. This is very common, commonly done, but it's required in the city to go through this process so that other companies can apply to be a consultant. So they apply to be hired by the city as a consultant to do a project. So the request for proposals, the RFP, is what describes the explains what project they're going to be doing so that they can apply for that, and then we can make a selection on which company is most qualified. So the reason why we are going to be seeking a consultant to do this work, the community needs assessment and the strategic investment plan, is because measures E and K require that this be done by December 31st of 2020. And a consultant will bring on expertise in having led these types of projects in the past, which means that they'll have lots of experience with this, lots of techniques, tools, and they're going to have a much larger capacity for the level of community engagement that we need to really make sure that we can strategize how the fund gets spent and where we invest our money in Richmond. And so they'll be able to do a lot more community engagement than if it was just the department on our own. Also, the consultant will be tasked with collaborating with you all as members of the oversight board. So again, that expertise, experience, and level of capacity is going to be important to make sure that that happens. So far, to develop our request for proposals to describe the type of work we want the consultant to do, we convened the service provider working group, which you all heard about earlier, and asked them what a consultant should do and how a community needs assessment should be conducted. We talked a lot with Oakland and San Francisco about what their process was like and lessons they learned throughout many, many years of doing this type of work. And we read through their community needs assessments and their strategic investment plans to continue to get ideas about how the process should be conducted. And then we looked at community needs assessments more generally to understand how they're conducted and all that they include. So just to give you some context of where we're going, the RFP will be released this Thursday. That means that it's made public, and at that point, different companies can view it as an application and read through and reach out to us with questions. They'll have a little over a month in which they have to submit all of their proposals by January 9th. From January 9th through the 21st, that's when the proposals will be reviewed and finalists will be interviewed. So that is going to be the subcommittee. We'll go into that a little bit in more depth, where members of the oversight board on that review subcommittee will be reviewing those proposals and interviewing those finalists. And then by February, we will have identified that consultant, and hopefully the city council will approve that contract, and so they can begin conducting the community's assessment and working with the department staff and with the oversight board beginning in February. And so then through February and March through December of 2020, they'll be leading that community needs assessment, writing that strategic investment plan, and the strategic investment plan must be adopted by the end of 2020, by December 31st of 2020. So first the oversight board has to approve the strategic investment plan, and then the city council has to approve that. So we're going to a little bit more of what a community needs assessment is, what a strategic investment plan is as well.
So the RFP, that's what we're putting out to explain what this work is, what this project is, what we want done. So the RFP includes some background information about the department, what we're hoping to see in applicants, the scope of services, which is just what is the work, what do we want to see done, a timeline, how they'll submit their application, what the selection process will look like, and then lots of other logistical city legal requirements. So those proposal elements, that is a very detailed description of what is the work they're going to do. And so we'll talk about that in more depth in a minute as well. And so these proposals with they have to include their timeline, previous work samples, so we can see what quality work they have done and how closely aligned it is to what we want here in the city of Richmond, as well as their staff resumes, so we know who's going to be working on this project, and their proposed budget. All of that will be submitted in their application, which is what we will be reviewing with a very clear rubric so you can assess each consultant. We maybe will have two applications. We maybe will have 30 applications. We don't know. And then looking through this, we'll be able to identify the best consultant. I'm going to try and go quickly, but please do stop me if you need a clarifying question because I want to make sure that everyone understands what this process will look like. So the scope of services, this is again included in the RFP, and it describes what is the work that we're going to be hiring this consultant to do. What is all that they're going to be tasked with over the February-ish of 2020 through December of 2020. So the way we broke that out was kind of conceptualizing four elements or four areas of work. The core being community engagement, and that's really going to be the core of how the community needs assessment and strategic investment plan will then be developed. So first they'll have to be creating a community engagement plan, and that's just all the activities and ways in which they're going to get feedback. Through that, they'll be planning their needs assessment process, and then from that needs assessment, they'll be able to write a strategic investment plan about how the fund should be dispersed and used. There's also this element of ongoing project management, which is just a fancy phrase for like how you manage the work. How are you in communication with the staff? How are you in collaboration with the oversight board and just making sure that they're prepared for leading and driving that work? Again, if we're going to be hiring a consultant, it is to free up our capacity to do other things as department staff. So the community engagement plan, that's going to be a variety of activities like listening sessions, one-on-one interviews, town halls, things like that. And we have incorporated in the RFP that the consultants should have experience and ability to prioritize youth input and feedback throughout these activities, as well as making events and or written documents accessible in English and in Spanish. They should be able to provide childcare, things like that, so that the community engagement is truly inclusive of Richmond residents. Not only will these activities be opportunities for learning, listening, and gathering feedback, but also the consultant should be able to share what's learned back and make sure that participants and Richmond residents understand how that feedback was incorporated into the decisions that are made. And ultimately, all the community engagement activities are part of the needs assessment and strategic investment plan. So a needs assessment is really a process that leads to a written report. And so this needs assessment looks at what are the assets and resources and strengths that are going on in Richmond, what services are already being provided and what's being done well, where are residents leading their own initiatives and supporting each other in informal ways, but it also identifies needs and gaps and where are the places that this fund could also be used to really shore up services that aren't being provided or youth who need additional supports. And then the needs assessment should also be aligned to some of those priority populations outlined in measures E and K, and I'd be identifying the strategies and outcomes that we want to see as a result of investing funds back in Richmond's young people. So then the strategic investment plan takes that needs assessment and turns it into a plan for action, which is going to be what's guiding our grant-making process. So we'll look at an example in a moment, but it tells us what types of programs should be funded and how much of our funding should be allocated to each of those types. So an example earlier was around early childhood versus services for middle schoolers, right? And this strategic investment plan will be kind of identifying which of those strategies we should be pursuing and in what ways. So this is the document that ultimately the oversight board will have to approve and then the city council will have to approve. Yes, Board Member Hedstrom.
So will
modifications to the, or suggestions on the strategic investment plan?
Yes. So we've also written into the RFP that throughout this whole process, the consultant should be collaborating with the board in a variety of different ways. And with the strategic investment plan, you will be able to provide feedback into that. And they are tasked with incorporating your feedback in various ways, too.
So will they be making reports to us on a regular basis?
Yes.
That is the plan. Yes.
So that an example here, this is the San Francisco Service Allocation Plan, which is just their strategic investment plan. And so you can see how they've also specified how much money goes to the different strategies. So the difference between youth workforce development, that's different than educational supports, that's different than early childhood education, right? And this is the level of detail that the strategic investment plan will have, and this comes from the community needs assessment. So what are folks elevating as the priority needs for young people? So project management, again, their level of coming and meeting in person and working with the oversight board. Some of the qualifications that we will be evaluating the consultant on is their experience conducting these types of processes, especially in cities like Richmond, working with young people, working with non-English speaking communities as well. All of that is going to elevate a consultant in this application process. So this is where we get into the details of the review subcommittee for folks that are interested in being on that. The application, the RFP goes out this week, and they will have a month, and they have to submit all their applications on January 9th. So from January 10th through 15th, the subcommittee will have the applications and will review them. So there'll be a criteria checklist, like a rubric, to evaluate and score individually. You'll have about 5 days. Again, we will later have a better sense of how much interest there is in this. Right now, we have no idea whether it's going to be 2 applications or 30. But we had those 5 days to review it. And then on the 15th, we'll have a meeting, and it will have to be the 15th. I think we're aiming for like 6:30 p.m., so it could be the same time, to discuss and review those applications and decide on 2 to 3 finalists. Those finalists, again, part of the RFP is that they know that the interviews have to be on January 21st, and they have to just set aside that date and be available. On January 21st, we'll interview those 2 to 3 finalists and then decide after the interviews who we want to recommend, we being this subcommittee, who we want to recommend the City Council approve for a contract. If we make that decision on 21st, then we can take our recommendation to City Council so that they can approve that, and then we can enter contract and begin as quickly as possible, given we have, at that point, less than 12 months to do this full community needs assessment strategic investment process. So we definitely want to get started. So with that as an oversight board, there's lots of opportunities to then be involved in this process. The first being selecting the consultant. So as we mentioned, there is this subcommittee for folks to join review applications and interview finalists. If you are not able to commit to that full level of work, all board members, we are going to have digital copies of each application. You can review them as well and submit feedback, considerations, things that rise to the top, that will be kind of informally evaluated. It won't be the official score, but the subcommittee would review and have your feedback and be like, oh, I think that is a really important consideration, et cetera. All board members can also submit questions to include in the finalist interviews that then the subcommittee can decide to yes, we want to ask that question, and then that will be part of the interview process as well. But those 2 to 6 board members that are on the subcommittee have to review each application, have to use the tool to guide, have to be present on the 15th to be part of that decision-making meeting, and then be present on the 21st to interview the finalists. And then once the consultant is identified and hired, then you all as board members will be invited to attend the various community engagement, communities assessment activities, so those town halls, those listening sessions, things like that. You'll also be providing feedback if you think that there's various
organizations or events or processes that should be done, or feedback if you attend one and you have some feedback for a consultant, you will receive the community needs assessment report and then ultimately providing feedback and approving the strategic investment plan before it goes to City Council. So these are all the ways as board members you will definitely be involved and or can also opt in additionally. So this brings us to the board action, which is to select the subcommittee members. So we are looking for 2 up to 6 board members, ideally balanced between young people under the age of 24 and over the age of 24 to sit on that. As we mentioned, on Friday, January 10th, we will have prepared all of the applications that we receive into a packet, which you could come pick up. If you need it dropped off, we can arrange for that, but we would need to set that up prior so that we can make sure we get it to you on the 10th. And then you'll have from the 10th to the 15th to read and score all applications. And then on the 15th, come in the evenings and we'll discuss that. Dinner will be provided, I'm pretty sure. Discuss it and figure out who the finalists are. And then on the 21st, about 3 hours to interview each of the finalists and then decide on who we recommend ultimately.
And do all the members have to be present at the time when applicants are being for interviews that day?
All members of the subcommittee, yes, but not all board members generally.
And there, for members who are on the subcommittee, we understand things like if you're on the subcommittee and you've scored and everyone can't attend the interviews, that we can work with that. It just, mm-hmm. It's good to know ahead of time if someone can't.
Do we have a time frame for the 21st?
So we're aiming to schedule, this is something we wanted to double check on the later half of the day. So for instance, maybe starting at 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. or 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. But ideally, we probably won't be able to do a 6:30 p.m. start time for that day.
And that's something that we'll have to, once we get the subcommittee and we know how many people we want to interview, then we can figure that out together. But we're trying to make it as early as possible. So we respect the fact that people have to go to school and jobs in the morning. And then also the consultants that we'll be interviewing. Usually we do them during the day, during work hours. And so we're trying to balance that with the board member needs as well as staff needs and consultant needs. Mm-hmm. So we'll figure it once the subcommittee is selected and our team is together, we'll figure out all the logistics. This is an action item. And so you received your report, and now we want to select up to 6. So it could be.
Pardon me.
Yes. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yes. And just going off. So for this action, the co-chair, co-chair Yana and co-chair Johnson are able to select and appoint, and we're leaving it to the co-chairs unless there's anything else you'd like to say.
Yes. So this is the opportunity for our co-chairs to serve as co-chairs, but we do want people under 24. We need at least up to three people who are interested, so that you can select from those interested. Co-chair Johnson. So I think we want to ask if there are who under 24 is interested in serving as a member of the subcommittee to help select a consultant for. A consultant to help us do a community needs assessment and strategic investment plan. People can raise their hands, and that way Co-Chair Johnson can make the selection. I see a hand from Co-Chair Dandy Evans, a hand from Co-Chair Lee. Board member. I'm sorry, I'm giving everybody co-chair titles. Board member Dandy Evans, board member Lee are 2.
Quick question. Are we able to partake in the subcommittee?
As a co-chair, yes. You can put yourself on the subcommittee if you're interested. So, Co-Chair Johnson, if you're interested, you can also do that. So, I had
the selection.
So, I got 2 hands. Is that it for the 15 to 24 age group? 3 hands. So, now it's up to you, Co-Chair Johnson, to select up to 3 people. You can choose up to 3. If you don't want to do it, you can choose all 3 of the ones who raise their hands.
I would take Lee and Mrs. Evans.
Okay. Are you putting yourself on, or are you, you want to put yourself on? Okay. So for the record, we have co-chair Johnson and board members Dandy Evans and board member Lee on the subcommittee for the 15 to 24 age group.
What?
For a point of clarification, is it maxed at 3 for youth?
It is not. We can up it. Okay. We were just thinking, do we want to do that?
The only reason I was asking because Boardman Rangel had raised his hand.
Yeah.
And so
we can do 4. We just are trying not to, of course, get it to 8. So that means it can be 4 on the 15 to 24, and then it has to be 3 on the over 24. It cannot be over 3. So, Co-Chair Johnson, is it okay? Okay. So you're appointing board member Godinez. So we have 4. All right. Thank you all. And then for the over 24 category, 5. So you have 5, and it's up to you. So if you have 3, a max of 3 that you can select.
Because it can't be a quorum.
Can you please raise your hands again? Such an active.
Can we get your names, please? Can we get names on the microphone?
Oh, yes. So board member Lobos, board member Quader, board member James, board member Hextrom, board member Galloway, board member Sequeira. So if you want to go to the contact info page, page 5 of your binder. I think it's everyone.
All adults.
And I do want to point out, too, that what's nice is that we will provide all the applications to everyone so people can still review. Your scores won't be counted as part of the scoring process.
Because scores are official public material, so the scores will be made public. But then the unofficial scores or unofficial comments, that is not made public.
So I'm going to go with Caprice James, Stephanie Sequeira, and myself.
Okay. Thank you.
So just to clarify those next steps, the RFP will be released this Thursday, the 5th. All proposals from consultants are due January 9th. We will have the applications prepared and ready, both digital and hard copies for everyone on January 10th. The subcommittee will meet on January 15th at 6:30 p.m. And then the subcommittee interviews finalists on January 21st, and we'll follow up as soon as we are able to with those times.
Thank you all.
Thanks.
Okay. And there are no speakers for this item. Prior to moving to item F6, we would like to leave it to the co-chairs as to whether you'd like to motion to move item F6 to our next meeting. Item F7 will be fairly short, but we also just want to be considerate of time.
I'll move.
Anybody or the chairs have
Oh, yes, I believe the chair has to recognize it.
So we're motioning to move F6 to the next meeting? Yep. Okay, so I want to make a motion to move F6 to our next meeting.
A second.
Yes, and for clarification, though we're moving to item F6, which it was in regards to staggered terms, terms begin in the official meeting of the first official meeting of Oversight Board, which is today. Okay, and moving to item F7, discuss general announcements and administrative matters, including upcoming scheduling and future agenda items. There are 0 speakers for this item. So for this item, we wanted to, create an opportunity for the board to discuss upcoming scheduling. As we did previously, we look forward, if it is fine with the board, to move forward with a poll to see what is most available for the board members. That being said, as you can see on the screen, we would like to establish, upon the discretion of the board, a regular scheduled meeting. So here are dates that we've been looking into, which include Monday, Wednesday, or Thursday. And this is also up for discussion for the board, but we've also been looking at times, so whether it begins anytime between 5 and 6:30. A big part of this is trying to be considerate of those who are still in school. Following this, on the next slide, please. So future agenda items. We just wanted to briefly mention that here are some items that we hope to discuss in future oversight board meetings. So again, an update on the request for proposals, update in the community needs assessment, and other areas include, it's not listed here, but bylaws, but especially the Department of Children and Youth vision, mission, and value statements. We have not created those as a department with the intent that the board would be involved in doing so. Mm-hmm. And lastly, oversight board trainings, which is something that we really want to look into doing with this oversight board. We've gotten feedback from the service provider working group, and we look forward to seeing how we can implement that as soon as possible. Are there any questions?
So is the meeting adjourned? Because I motion to the meeting to be adjourned.
The meeting is adjourned at 8:50.